It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I thank each and every one of you for joining us, for listening in. As we look at these issues, searching for truth and clarity by looking at the issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do that. And so thank you so much for joining us today. Live with intention. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Happy Friday to you, producer Steve.
Yes, not just any old Friday, but a payday Friday.
So it's a doubly great day for you.
Yeah.
Well, be sure and check out our website. It is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests as well as our most recent podcasts. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who support us as we are an independent voice, an alternative voice out there. And we really, really appreciate that. We've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to go through some headlines in this first and second segment. Talk with Hal Van Herkey at the bottom of the hour. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. And then Rick Turnquist will be joining us in the third and fourth segment. You know that he's moved to Oklahoma, but he still is watching what's happening here in Colorado. And we're going to continue to have this conversation about this Initiative 25, LEAP, which is the Learning Achievement or Learning Enrichment and Achievement Program. It's the more we look at it, the more complicated it becomes. And our founding fathers knew that if legislation was so complicated that everyday people cannot understand that, then we are in a difficult situation. And we are seeing this across the spectrum. And it takes a lot to try to get your brain around all of these different things that are coming at us. But that is why we do the show, is to help you to do that. Recommend that you tune in to our America's Veterans Story show this Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. and 10 to 11 p.m. right here on KLZ 560. And our FM station is 100.7 FM. We interviewed two veterans. First of all, Jimmy Nishimura served during the Vietnam War, and he was born in Japan but always wanted to come to America, and actually went to the draft board and was drafted into the Army and served, as I mentioned, during the Vietnam War. Our other interview is with World War II veteran John Sagers, and very interesting. He was stationed in a lighthouse in Oregon on the West Coast, and fascinating conversation there as well, so would highly recommend that you tune into those. These shows are brought to you by great sponsors as well. One of them is Hooters Restaurants. They sponsor both of the shows, and they have five locations. That is Westminster, Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And they have all kinds of specials. On Saturdays, kids eat free when an adult orders their entree. So that's a great thing to get together with friends, maybe watch some sports. And Hooters Restaurants is a great place to do that. You can go to my website, kimmunson.com, and you will find all of their specials there under the Sponsors tab. And then, of course, click on Hooters. Let's go ahead and jump into our quote for today. And it's by Ronald Reagan. And you know him. He was an American politician. He served as our 40th president of the United States from 1981 to 1989. And he was a highly influential voice of modern conservatism. And prior to his presidency, he was a Hollywood movie actor and union leader before serving as the 33rd governor of California from 67 to 75. He was born in 1911 and he died in 2004. And this is a pretty famous one, Steve. But he says, government is not a solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Government does not solve problems. It subsidizes them. Government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. And the problem is not that people are taxed too little. The problem is that government spends too much. And there you have it, Steve.
We have an opportunity here to kind of set the table. I mean, this quote sets the table for the things that I think you're going to talk about here in the next 15, 20 minutes. I think it was just the opening just now talks about your voice about legislation that is so complicated, people can't figure it out. And I think I love to watch how state and local governments emulate what they see happening at the federal level. And, this is exactly what Reagan was speaking to here. But also, I think about the complexity of legislation. And when you want to talk about Initiative 25 or the LEAP thing, there's another great example of you build so much complex language into it. People don't have a clue what it is that they're really being asked to make a decision on.
And then, Steve, it's the sound bites. For example, Initiative 25, I can see it already. It is going to be raise marijuana taxes, so raise taxes on somebody else for the children. And that segues us into a virtual meeting that I watched last night for my community. And when they talk about that all politics are local, they really are. And so last night was a virtual meeting. My town is proposing a 66% increase in our sales tax. And there's a variety of reasons that they have given for that. One of them is that the sales tax has not been raised since 1995. First of all, does that mean that taxes always have to go up? We don't all get automatic raises. And certainly coming out of COVID, very few people have seen a 66% increase in their income. And sales tax revenues are down in Lone Tree because of many of the decisions that were made by this mayor and by this city council. But now, and the meeting was so interesting. First of all, I have to ask, why on earth did it have to be a virtual meeting? And then it was controlled by a moderator, and you submitted questions via email. And then they would pick and choose which questions they wanted to bring forth, which I would submit to you, a lot of that was probably pre-planned. And they cut the meeting off without, I know a number of my friends were on the meeting, and none of our questions were even addressed. And so I just have this kind of knot in my stomach about it, because through this meeting, what they went through, all the pie charts and things, and they said, this is what we spend on public safety, this is what we spend here. Capital improvements is a big portion of that. And this, throughout, when I was on city council through here, I saw lots and lots of money that was being spent on, quote unquote, the progressive agenda. And that is this vision of moving people into apartment buildings up and down the light rail. And in fact, that Southeast Light Rail extension in Lone Tree was estimated at $207 million for 2.3 miles. When I was looking at the estimates of what was coming in, it actually was, well, and we're going to talk to Rick Turnquest about government math. It was more about like $253 million. I don't know what the final price tag was on that. But it's been this progressive dream of putting people on trains. And actually, buses are much more nimble, if you will. You can change bus lanes if you want to put people on mass transit. You can change bus lanes at basically by which streets, where demand might be. But once you get a rail line in, you can't really move that around much. And so this vision has been to put people in apartment buildings along the rail lines. And Lone Tree has pushed that forward. Lone Tree has put significant money into that. Lone Tree has influenced the county, the metropolitan districts, South Suburban, Parks and Rec, all of them to come in to help fund that dream as well. And one of the big things is that pedestrian bridge, if you're ever going on Lincoln, just west of I-25. That pedestrian bridge was voted on when I was on city council. It was a 4-1 vote. I voted against it because I felt that it was, first of all, we didn't know if it was really necessary. There was never a utilization study that was done. It was something that they wanted. And it came in just a little under $7 million. And they hired the architect, a very fine architect, but very expensive architect. That was the Fintress company that had actually been the architect for DIA. And you have to wonder, why, how is it that a little town of 13, 14,000 people need to hire an architect of that caliber for a pedestrian bridge and spend almost $7 million on it? So I submit to you that perhaps we need to, first of all, start to take a look at what that spending is versus coming in and proposing a 66% increase in your city sales tax. That is significant. That hurts people, Steve.
I sit here and I just got a big grin on my face when you said, well, first of all, sales tax hasn't been raised since 1995. And I'm thinking, if that's the best argument you've got, you need to go back to the drawing board.
Well, and the other thing, and I've thought about it a lot this morning, and that is that they use something that's called the Delphi technique. And that's where they basically control the meeting to get a predetermined outcome. And I talked to one of my friends afterwards, and she said, well, you know what, I think it was pretty effective as they went through that. And that's why we're going to have to really help people understand that a 66% increase in your sales tax significantly affects you. Now, one of the other things they have said is that, and I'm not sure, I want the proof on this. We didn't even have the opportunity to ask these real serious questions. They said 95% of the sales tax revenue that Lone Tree receives comes from people coming into the city. So it's like, oh, you don't really have to pay it. Everybody else is paying it. But no. On your purchases that come to your door when you're doing your online purchases, that's going to be 66% more sales tax that you're going to pay on that. That starts to affect people. And it's not just, that's not the only tax you pay. We have the taxes for our property taxes. We have our park and recreation district, our metro districts. We have federal taxes, state taxes. And ultimately, it's like, how long do we work for the government before we finally get to put some money in our pockets, Steve?
Well, I mean, it's tacky, I guess, but what do we call it? The Guernsey cow syndrome? They keep milking us and we're abused to them. And thus we start pushing back in one way or another.
Well, and I want, when we come back from break, I want to talk about the positive thing that government could actually do to increase revenues, and that what Lone Tree could actually do to increase revenues. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation because this is just a microcosm of what is happening out there. And many of the cities and municipalities in the metro area are considering tax increases when, in essence, it was government that shut down our businesses. And now, because the revenues have gone down, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that that can happen. Now then, they say they want to raise taxes on everybody who's come through COVID. They're just trying to get their feet back underneath them. And it's just kind of mind-boggling. But I can tell you how actually you really could increase tax revenues by lowering taxes. We'll be right back.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air as we search for truth and clarity through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And taxation ultimately comes down to force. Taxation ultimately forcibly takes money from you for government. And I think we all agree that, that there is some taxes that are necessary. The founders realized that as well. But taxation needs to be limited. And what we are seeing is everyday hardworking people are really getting squeezed by the federal government, state government, county governments, and local governments. And what we're talking about right now is a online meeting that the city of Lone Tree had. And again, this is a microcosm of what is happening across the nation. And that is that they use this something called the Delphi technique. And Steve, you'd mentioned that you understand this. This is getting a predetermined outcome by kind of controlling the meeting.
Well, everything you said, obviously, it is an online presentation, and the if they welcomed questions, there was somebody screening those questions up front to make sure a zinger didn't get through and would make them look like maybe they weren't really on the right track. Mm-hmm. So, Delphi technique, and let's just say there were a handful of average people from that municipality watching, and if they weren't really aware of what was happening, they would think that, well, this is going down well. This is, looks like something we need to consider.
Right. This makes some sense. So a couple of things. First of all, they did a comparison of some of the municipalities in the metro area that have higher tax rates. So they make the argument that this would, and I'm paraphrasing, but bring us closer to parity with those tax rates. But one has to ask why. And the population of Lone Tree has, since 1995, I guess, when it was incorporated, the population has actually doubled. So in essence, you have more people that would be paying the tax, which one would think that that would increase that revenue as well. So there's other things that have to be considered on this. But people are rational economic actors. And if, in fact, there is a lower tax rate in another municipality, that is a way many times that draws people to that area to shop. So I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said, I know someone that was going to buy a big ticket item, a television, and that person actually drove across from North Denver to Lone Tree to purchase that at the Costco in Lone Tree because the taxes were lower. Well, just think about that. If your taxes are lower and it is encouraging people to come to your municipality to spend money and your taxes are lower, you're going to have more and more people do that, and that is going to grow tax revenue. But if, in fact, you raise taxes, it takes away that incentive, and it has a directly opposite effect of what they say that they're actually trying to accomplish, because if you want less of something, you tax it. And so in this case, if you want less sales tax in Lone Tree, you tax it more. And so it doesn't make any sense. And then there was the question about all of the empty storefronts that Lone Tree now has. What will happen with that? And they said that they would offer some economic incentives to bring those businesses in. So once again, they're going to pick winners and losers. Your businesses that have been here for many, many years are not going to get a break. And once again, if in fact lower taxes or incentives helping businesses to come into the city, again, reducing rules, regulations, taxes, and that brings businesses in, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that is what you should do across the spectrum, Steve.
I wonder, can they take an honest, good look at themselves? Did they have, put their egos aside for a second and look at all those empty storefronts and say, why are they here? Is it strictly just the outcome of the virus, or is there something else going on?
I think that is a really, really important question. And I wanted to talk about this. I need to continue to think about this. I was frustrated that I felt like I'd been manipulated through the meeting, that there's this predetermined outcome. And then there was kind of the threats. And the threats were that, well, if you don't approve this, Well, we might have to get rid of a few police officers. And of course, that correlates to public safety. We might not be able to work so hard on our traffic lights, making sure that our traffic light, that's one of your favorite things, Steve.
Don't go there.
We might have to get rid of trash service. You know, all of these things that everyday people affects their lives. They did not once say anything about all the money that they spend on capital projects, because that is something that they really want to do, is to use people's money for their vision of how a community should be. And so I just wanted to bring this to you. And it's really kind of more of a thought process that I'm trying to go through on this, on how to address this potential 66% increase in our city sales tax. Any final comment on that, Steve?
Well, I should have jumped in on this when you were actually talking about the light rail, through the Lone Tree down to Ridgegate. If you're traveling on Lincoln, and it doesn't matter what time of day, you get to see that train as it passes over. You can get to see right through it, basically an X-ray view of it, and see there aren't many people on it, if any. Mm-hmm. And okay, that's, we know the way the light rail works. That's basically nearing the end of the line. It's not going to have a lot of people on it just by the way it works. So ultimately, maybe the better test is go down to that RTD parking facility and see. I don't know how many spaces they built. It's a huge, at least 3 or 4 level garage. How many of those spaces are actually used on a weekday basis? And, that would be another great indicator, is how much was it really needed?
Well, and I think also there was the perception, there has been this perception that being near light rail makes that property more valuable. And so building that into Ridgegate, there's this perception that is a real value.
All
and
right.
So probably then that land is being able to be sold at a higher rate.
Looking to the future. Hey, I have a snarky vein in me. Let's go back to Reagan's quote and modify it a little bit.
Okay.
Where he says, government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. Let's change that. Government's view of us could be summed up in a few short phrases. If they move, tax them. If they keep moving, regulate them. If they stop moving, subsidize them.
Yes, and that's exactly what you're seeing play out here. So I wanted to mention, I'm going to change gears here, Steve, on something also very interesting. Patty had pulled this. This was from Fox Business, that Biden advisor Susan Rice is to divest $2.7 million stake in company building oil pipeline that the administration supported. It says a political panel joins Kennedy to discuss the developments in Cuba and around the world. A federal ethics watchdog agency ordered Susan Rice, the director of President Biden's Domestic Policy Council, to sell a lucrative stake in Canadian energy firm Enbridge earlier this month, just weeks after his administration allowed the company's hotly debated Line 3 oil pipeline to proceed. Since the Office of Government Ethics directed Rice to divest from more than 36 corporate entities in which she, her husband, or a family trust held shares due to potential conflicts of interest, according to filings dated July 9 and obtained by Fox Business. And the holdings include the shares in Enbridge worth more than $2.7 million. And one has to ask, first of all, Biden comes in and he shuts down the Keystone XL pipeline. Here we have Rice over here that has an investment in an oil pipeline that they approved. And then this just came across the wire this morning. This is it's an op-ed by Senator Ted Cruz, and I think it was published in the Washington Examiner. I guess it was yesterday. And this is interesting. It says congressional hearings are all but intentionally designed to be uninteresting. But anyone who tuned into the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing this Tuesday would have seen something remarkable. Cruz asked Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland if she agreed that allowing Russian President Vladimir Putin to complete his Nord Stream 2 pipeline to Germany would be a disaster for American national security, and that it would make our European allies subject to economic and energy blackmail from Russia, and that it would empower Putin to carry out exactly that blackmail. She tersely answered, "I do, Senator." A few hours later, the Biden administration announced it had inked a deal to allow Putin to complete his Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And then Cruz goes on to say this decision is a total surrender to Putin. It's a multi-billion dollar gift that will keep on giving in perpetuity at the expense of the United States and our allies. And one has to ask why. I don't know the answer for sure on that, Steve.
Well, we've been watching this unfold now for what? Since January when he first made the deal on the pipeline right here at home. And then seeing the energy prices, you know, start to spiral upwards.
Right.
So, it just...
These policies...
Government policy working for the people, it's just not happening.
It is not happening. And we're waking up. What to do? First of all, we have to shed light on this. That's why we do this show. And I really get to work with a lot of great sponsors. And before we go to break, on the line with me is Hal Van... He and his wife, Linnea, are entrepreneurs. They own a small business in Sedalia, Colorado, Castlegate Knife and Tool. Hal, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. It's always a pleasure to be on.
And you are a great sponsor both of the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. And you are a veteran. And tell us a little bit about what you do for veterans and first responders and our military personnel at Castlegate.
Yeah, we do a number of things throughout the year and sponsor a number of different nonprofits and charities. But one of the things we do for the individuals themselves is that we give a 10% discount all day, every day on anything we sell, both in the store or on the website. So we, if you come into the store, you just let us know you're a vet or a first responder or prior service, and we will show an ID. We'll give you a 10% discount on anything in the store. If you want to buy something on our website, you need to contact us and get a one-time discount code, and we'll hook you up that way.
Okay. And the website is castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. And Hal, you are starting a new service, a really valuable service for people, and that is knife sharpening.
Yeah, it took us a while to get it going, and you were anxiously asking about it. Quite often, but yeah, about a month ago, we launched knife sharpening. We have professional knife sharpeners on staff. We invested in the best knife sharpening equipment available in the marketplace so that we can sharpen any type of knife, serrated knife, non-serrated kitchen knives, etc. And so just bring them into the store. We turn it around within 2 days, and you can get your knife set, whether it's an outdoor knife or a complete kitchen set, et cetera.
Okay. And do you also do scissor sharpening, or is it just knives?
We do basic scissor sharpening, but we won't do scissor sharpening for professional scissors, for somebody that does it for a living, like hairdressers or something like that, or seamstresses, because those types of scissors are really... unique, and we refer them out to a different source for that.
Okay. And again, people can get to the website at castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. What's kind of the last thing you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
I just think that I want to thank your listeners for the support that we get. We frequently have people come into the store or contacting us after we've had one of these discussions, and especially when we have some of our longer segments. And constant support from your listeners is always appreciated.
Well, and I really appreciate your partnership. And next week, you are going to be our featured guest, I think, on our Friday show. So stay tuned, because I know people really... They really appreciate your perspective. In fact, one of my neighbors just the other day was walking by, and he said, I need to get down to Castlegate and meet Hal. He said Hal has such an important perspective. He's a businessman, and he really enjoys your perspective. So I said, well, be sure and let him know that you heard about him from me. And he said, I will. So Hal Van Herke, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll be right back with Rick Turnquist.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute and support us. Today, it's TurnQuest Friday. Rick TurnQuest is on the line. You know him. He is an author, a blogger at advancedfreedom.com. We're going to talk about this Colorado initiative, the Learning, Enrichment, and Academic Progress Program. It's called LEAP. It's Initiative 25. Welcome to the show, Rick TurnQuest.
Hey, Kim, good morning. It's great to be here. And I have to confess, I had a little moment of homesickness when I listened to the National Anthem and I wasn't standing in the studio with you.
I know. I miss you. But you are in Oklahoma where there is not this onerous government that we have happening here in Colorado. And this LEAP initiative, we just found out about it kind of by accident. Somebody had sent it over to Patty to say, take a look at it. And we hadn't even realized that it was out there. However, it's very well organized. There's money involved. There's people that are already being paid significantly on this. And once we looked at it and read the initiative, we both had significant concerns. And you do as well, Rick TurnQuest. So tell us what your process is on this whole thing.
Well, when you first told me about it, I was like, ah, no big deal. But then I read your piece on your website about it, 10 Reasons to Decline to Sign Colorado Initiative 25 called LEAP. And I really encourage everybody to go ahead and read that. It really is a bad idea. And when I initially sat down to write an op-ed about it, my working title was Another Bad Idea. And this morning I got an email from my friends at the Colorado Freedom Force, and they called their email Another Bad Initiative. So it's clearly a bad idea, and I really am surprised that there's some Republicans putting their names on it. I'm really disappointed that that's the case.
Well, and some really fine Republicans, and I've reached out to them. I have work to do and to continue to reach out to them. But Rick, in reading your piece, which we'll be publishing here very soon, a couple of things. I had not read the actual ballot question. I was over here on the initiative because that's where the real guts are. And you, in your piece, are talking about an increase in taxes of $138 million approximately. And in the actual initiative language, they do not refer to a number at all. And then as I read the ballot initiative language that and people are signing that initiative, it looks good, but it's inconsistent with what the initiative actually says. And I have a knot in my stomach about that. It's when I say inconsistent, I'm trying to figure out what happened. It seems dishonest to me. I guess that's the bottom line, Rick.
Well, it's very difficult to find the actual initiative, and we talked about this last evening. We're going to go ahead and publish my piece last evening, and then we decided to hold off till this morning because we were looking at different language when you were studying it and when I was studying it. And so I'm not sure that I've even read the actual initiative, except what I have seen is what's on the Secretary of State website, which is one paragraph, which is the required language under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, where it says, shall taxes be increased? It's all in caps. That's where the $137.8 million or whatever it is comes from. And they have just one paragraph. None of the language about the board or how it's going to be governed or what it's going to do, none of that is in the ballot initiative that's on the Secretary of State website. So it's very difficult to find the actual real, true thing that would be implemented if this thing is passed by the voters of Colorado.
Well, I have been back and forth on phone messages with one of the people who I respect who's on the endorsement page. And he said that he felt that this was a strategic move towards school vouchers, more school choice, which is something he supports. I do as well. And I'm like, I just can't get there. I don't understand. And then I realized when I looked at the ballot question there, it says that there will be an independent state agency. That's, there's a whole lot more right there, but you kind of gloss over those words in this ballot question, to administer the program for out-of-school learning opportunities chosen by parents. That sounds a little bit like school choice, a little bit like vouchers. What they don't explain is that this independent board is unelected. It is unaccountable to the voters. It's unaccountable to the legislature. This governor chooses that board, and then that board gets to choose their replacements. So even if we do the hard work to get a good conservative Republican governor elected, this thing is over here self-perpetuating, because that governor would have basically no power to, or no decision-making on who those new board members would be. And so that's kind of glossed over in this language. And then it says parents, chosen by parents on these out-of-school learning opportunities. It also doesn't explain that this unelected, unaccountable board actually chooses who the vendors will be. And so the parents have a menu. Now, somebody said, we want to have, that was sitting at the table, or he told me he was sitting at the table helping write this, that they want to have a wide range of options for parents to choose from. But when you have this independent board is being chosen by this governor, I submit to you, when we look over here at the Air Quality Control Commission, what they're doing, very progressive, very onerous, very controlling decisions there. Why would we think there would be something different here, Rick?
Well, and there's no reason to expect that there would be anything different. This board clearly would be a group of political insiders, and given the fact that Governor Polis masquerades as a moderate, but he's really a true blue progressive, he would nominate several very progressive people, and by progressive I mean regressive, because they're all wanting to take us back to the dark ages. But it would be a board of leftist political insiders. They would have virtually unlimited power over the funds raised by this tax, and they would be able to spend it however they see fit. And you know that a lot of their vendors would be other progressive organizations and groups. And it's all part of the progressive infrastructure I wrote about a couple of years ago, mm-hmm, which is on my site, to advancedfreedom.com. I encourage everybody to read that. If there's any listeners here in Oklahoma, I'd encourage you to read that too, because it's coming here.
Well, and that is very important that Colorado's been the petri dish, Rick, of all this stuff, and they want to get it done here. Then they do want to export it to other states. That's why it's important that we hold the line here. And when you look at the endorsement page, again, some really great people on there. I think that they've looked at this. They've thought that perhaps it's a strategic move towards school choice and vouchers. If you read the whole initiative, that is not the case. A couple of other things. Again, this is not telling the whole story. It says it's funding the program by increasing the retail marijuana tax by 5% by 2024. That is true. But when you look at the actual initiative, it says it will increase these marijuana retail taxes 3% in 2022, 4% in 2023, and 5% in 2024. But after that, they can increase it an additional 10% for a total of an additional 15% tax. So again, I think that it's disingenuous that you pull this out and put this in the ballot language when the initiative actually says something even more is going on that, Rick.
Yeah, it's the language of the ballot initiative is very convoluted and confusing. And when I was reading, and I've actually found, what's actually on the Secretary of State website, which is the actual ballot initiative, the the language behind it. It talks about the nine-member board that you referred to. So when I wrote my original piece, I was looking at something different, which was on the Colorado legislature's website, and they had some different language regarding the board. And it's very confusing that you know, you have two different things on two different state websites that are different. So if people are trying to research this to decide if they want to sign this petition to put it on the ballot or not, they're presented with inconsistent and not comparable things in many cases.
It's very confusing. If you take a look at Patty's two excellent op-eds, and she's got another one that will be coming out possibly this weekend, it takes, as you know, Rick, it takes so much time to really research this out. But if you go to either my op-ed, her op-ed, or probably with yours, we should also link at the bottom of your op-ed the actual initiative so that it can be easy for people to find it. Because what you're referring to is there were two different initiatives that were submitted for LEAP, Initiative 18 and Initiative 25. And on your quick search, Initiative 18 comes up, but it is somewhat different than 25. It referred to a 13-member board, whereas Initiative 25 has a nine-member board. But again, it's very confusing for people to try to get that actual language. It shouldn't be like that in America. It should be very easy for people to be able to go to do that research. That's why your op-eds, your blog to advancefreedom.com, our show is so important. We may not always get it right. For example, I did ask Zach to make a change on my op-ed because someplace I had seen that it could be a potential $200 million in revenue, which I think it probably could be. But I was not quite sure where I'd source that, and I realized I needed to make sure that I had that correct. So we changed that to use what you had brought forward, and that is the $138 million that they are referencing in the ballot question. One other thing, Rick, before we go to break, in the ballot language, they reference this number of 138 million, but nowhere in the initiative is there that concrete number. Again, that's a big why, a big inconsistency to me.
It is very inconsistent. The answer is they don't really know how much it's going to be because people enjoy their legal marijuana in Colorado, and the tax projections for when Amendment 64 was first passed, I believe, have been exceeded considerably by what they originally thought. So over the years, since legal marijuana has been in Colorado, according to Forbes magazine, the state has collected over $1.6 billion in marijuana taxes and revenues. That's a lot of money, and I believe it's far in excess of what they originally thought it was going to be.
Well, and that was supposed to be for the children. Rick Turnquest is on the line with me. It's Turnquest Friday. We're talking about LEAP, which is this Learning Enrichment and Academic Progress program that very possibly might be on the ballot. They're currently in the petition gathering stage, and there's two ways to get something on the Colorado ballot. One is if it is referred by the Colorado legislature. The other is through the Citizen Initiative. And I'm pleased to say that I've talked to a number of you out there that when you've been approached in front of the grocery store, you have declined to sign. And I laud you on doing that. If we could keep this off the ballot, that would be a very good thing. There's been so much money that has been spent for this petitioning already that it's very possibly going to be on the ballot. But when we come back, Rick, I want to talk with you a little bit about something else that you uncovered, and that was some government math that you will not want to miss. We'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. On the line with me is Rick Turnquist. It's Turnquist Friday. He writes a number of great op-eds for the Kim Munson Show, as well as he has an excellent blog, and that is toadvancefreedom.com. Rick Turnquist, I'm going through the ballot language on this, and before we get to something that you uncovered, which is kind of funny and it's kind of not, if you look here, and from what I can tell, the very last two paragraphs of Initiative 25 de-tabers or de-bruces, it's really a kind of takes Tabor out at the knees, and Tabor is Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. And one of the three things it says is, hey, PBIs, that's politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, if you want to keep excess revenue, if it's a quote-unquote a profitable year in tax revenue, and if you want to keep revenue above a formula of population plus inflation, then you just have to ask us. But in this initiative, the very last two paragraphs says that we give you the permission that you don't have to ask us. I think a lot of people don't understand that. It kind of takes Tabor out at the knees. But from what I can tell in the ballot language, or the title here, it says authorizing transfers and revenue for program funding as a voter-approved revenue change. I think that's the code language for de-tabering or de-brucing that excess revenue, Rick.
That's how I would interpret it as well. And you and I both know, Kim, that ever since Tabor passed, we talked about this on the show last year, the year before, and it was on, we wrote a couple of pieces about it that I think are on your blog, kimmonson.com. But the left and certain people on the right have hated Tabor ever since it was voted in by the voters in 1992, and it's been a real check on government growth in Colorado, but it hasn't been completely effective. And as I noted when I researched this, I think it was 2 years ago, the state government in Colorado has still grown by in excess of the inflation and population growth. So Tabor's not 100% effective in limiting the growth of government, but it's certainly better than nothing. And they will do everything they can to chip away at Tabor and overturn it, and including language in something like this to take this new tax out of the Tabor equation is completely expected and something that is logical for them to do, because they don't want to have to ask voter permission for how they use this money. And in fact, I'm sure it's galling to them that they have to ask our permission to begin with.
Well, and on a side note on that, one of the headlines that Patty had pulled is that the Democrat legislators are going through all kinds of machinations to try to figure out how to keep additional revenue that came in because of all of the federal money that came in, all the COVID money. We are above those Tabor caps. And instead of giving it back to the people, they're trying to figure out how to keep that. Now, they do like to give money to people, but they like to give it. They've taken it from somebody else, and they like to choose who they give it to. Whereas with Tabor, this would come back to everyday hardworking people. Now,
yeah,
the next
with Tabor
thing.
Go ahead. Yeah, with Tabor refunds, it goes back to the people that paid it. And for what Democrats, what they want to do is they want to give money to their favored groups and take it from people they don't like and businesses, which, you know, you were talking earlier about empty storefronts in Lone Tree. And, you know, I truly believe that at the rate things are going, Colorado's economy is going to slip to the bottom of the 50 states. And we'll see the metrics for that on rich states, poor states. So.
Well, it's already occurring, which we've got to get this turned around. And elections really matter. That's a whole different thing. But continuing on, they have in the ballot title that this will specify learning opportunities to include tutoring and extra instruction in subjects including reading, math, science, writing, music, and art. First of all, I submit to you that we are using the school day, the valuable hours in the school day, and teachers' resources. So instead of teaching these things, your reading, writing, math, science, history, critical thinking, it's being used for critical race theory to divide our kids, to make them think there's oppressors and oppressed. That's being taught during the school day, and also sexualizing our kids through the LGBTQ agenda there. If, in fact, we were focusing on these things during the school day, reading, math, science, writing, those kinds of things, we would not need, quote-unquote, an after-school tutoring program.
That's exactly right. The public schools now have become progressive indoctrination. And now the purpose of school to educate children is being relegated to, you know, after school programs and home, you know, what parents can teach their children at home. It's really disgusting that we're paying property taxes to fund these schools that are teaching children not how to read, write, and do math and think critically, but about all these other things you talked about in terms of the leftist agenda. And then because the leftist indoctrination takes up so much of the school day, they have to resort to after hours to teach the true things that schools are for. And it just goes to show that, you know, one thing is that public schools are a failed experiment. And the other thing is that they keep wanting to spend more and more money on schools, which means teachers, which means union dues, which means going back to the Democratic Party. It's, you know, basically money laundering after a fashion. But they always want to spend more money on schools, but the results we're seeing from public schools don't justify additional funds. You'd think if with all these increases in funds that the schools will be getting better and better, and that's just not the case. And I know that, you know, people love vouchers and the idea of parents being able to send children to the schools they choose, and, you know, I've had family members who've done exactly that, and they should be able to, and they should, if they're paying taxes, those taxes should be able to support the education for their children that they want, and this doesn't do it. And this tax on people who use marijuana to fund education, that's ridiculous. That's just beyond the pale, in my opinion.
Well, and clearly, from some of the research that you did on the state website, it is very apparent that we need to be teaching arithmetic, because you had run some numbers, which, as I read it, I had to run them again, and I'm like, oh, this is funny. So tell us about that.
This is hilarious. So on the state website put together by the Legislative Council staff, they say that 10% of the revenue from the 15% tax on marijuana retail sales is allocated to local governments and apportioned according to some formula. The remaining 90% is allocated as follows, and it lists out three numbers: 72% to the marijuana tax cash fund, 16% to the general fund, and 13% to the state school fund. Well, I'm a CPA, and I do accounting for a living, and so I just, you know, double check those numbers to make sure they add up. And as it happens, they add up to more than 100%. They add up to 111%, because basically the three things add up to 100%, not 90%. So it's kind of silly that a state website has a mistake like that on it. But, you know, when I was researching the budget a couple of years ago, I found similar mistakes. And, you know, it's easy to make mistakes, but clearly, you know, we want our governments to be correct, and we want governments to use good math, and maybe they should be audited like public companies are.
Maybe they should be. One other thing, we've got just about 2 minutes, and wanted to bring this forward because Patty's continued to mention this. In the initiative, it says that in addition, and they list some things in the ballot title here that would be attractive to people, but there is also included in this access to mental, physical, and emotional health counseling and services. With what we see going on with the agenda of our children, I think that that's language that should be very concerning to us. It's in the initiative, but it's not in the ballot title. I think that's very important to understand that as well.
And there's a lot of things that are just in what's going to be on the ballot. There's a lot of things behind it that the people who are signing the petition won't see, and if it gets on the ballot, there's a lot of people voting on it won't see. And that's why it's really important for people like you and Patty to raise awareness of this. I mean, I don't live in Colorado anymore. I will never pay this tax because I don't use marijuana, but it's a bad tax. It's a bad idea. And I really, you know, since we're running out of time, I just want to read what I want to say to my friends who have put their names on this thing. Friends, check your premises. This program is not a legitimate function of government. It raises a narrow-based tax to fund programs and redistribution of taxpayer dollars that is completely inappropriate. I respectfully ask you to consider withdrawing your support for this measure.
Well, and I think that there's cover to do that now that we can actually recognize the inconsistencies on probably what was presented to them and what it says. Now, on the check your premises, on the basic, this new tax, one would say no. But the fact that that there may be this thought trying to get to school vouchers and school choice, that seems like a good thing. It's not a good way to do that. And so really appreciate that. Check your premises. But I think that this inconsistency is a way that people can really have good cover to take their names off of it, because in essence, what was presented and what it really is two different things. Rick Turnquest, we've got 30 seconds. Your final thought.
Well, I would just say let's not be fooled by the it's for the kids propaganda. They initially sold legal marijuana and the taxes on it as being for the kids, and very little of the money actually goes to the kids. And whenever they want to do something, it's always for the kids, and you know it's really not. It's for more power and more money for government.
Rick Turnquest, always love Turnquest Fridays. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kim. Have a great weekend.
Okay, thank you. And our quote for today is from Ronald Reagan. He said, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same." So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.